Hello and welcome to Talking Trading. I'm financial journalist Caroline Stephen. Every serious share trader will be familiar with the name of our special guest this week. Jack Schwager is a recognized industry expert in futures and hedge funds and is the author of a number of widely acclaimed books. He is best known, of course, however, for his timeless and legendary Market Wizard series. Jack has interviewed the greatest share traders of the last three decades, and he speaks with us today on how the Market Wizard series evolved, which traders he decided to interview for the series, what he learned from writing Market Wizards, and the answer to that seminal question that Jack Schwager gets asked all the time. What are the characteristics of these great share traders? We also hear about his latest project, Fundseeder, which is to discover the great undiscovered traders and link them to sources of investment. I found Jack to be surprisingly affable and easygoing. He was consummately professional to deal with. His honesty and politeness left me with a feeling of looking forward to speaking with him again. I have to warn you that when I interviewed Jack, he was sitting in his office at Fundseeder, which unfortunately is not carpeted. So the sound quality of his voice is slightly echoey. But bear with it, because as the interview continues, it does get easier to hear. I so hope you enjoy hearing the Market Wizard himself and hearing some of the truths of the great traders straight from the horse's mouth. Jack Schwager, author, industry expert, and the founder of Fundseeder. Hello and welcome to Talking Trading.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Jack, you've written extensively on the futures industry and on great traders in all financial markets. You are best known for your Market Wizard series, Market Wizards, New Market Wizards, Stock Market Wizards, Hedge Fund Market Wizards, and the Little Book of Market Wizards. Jack, how did the Market Wizard series come to pass?
Okay, well, it was an idea that I had for years before I actually did it. Now, most people assume that my first book was Market Wizards. It wasn't. It was my first sort of more popular audience type book. I wrote an analytical book as my first book in 84, which was called A Complete Guide to the Futures Markets, which ironically is currently being updated for publication this year. But that book led another publisher to invite me for lunch and pitch me an idea of doing a whole series of, I would be the sort of the chief editor for a series of analytical books. I said, I don't want to do that again, but I do have this idea. And the idea was, I knew some great traders. I had thought, gee, you know, I traded myself a little bit as a sideline. So it'd be a good excuse to sort of pick the brains of these people to do a book, and it would probably be fun to do. But I have a full-time job as director of futures research and didn't really see doing a book on top of that. But I mentioned that, and the editor said, well, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. You know, one thing led to another, and I agreed to do another book. So that's how it came about.
Which Market Wizard series book did you enjoy writing the most?
Gee, they were very similar in that respect. Because in each case, I'm sort of going around interviewing a bunch of people. I suppose maybe the first, because it was the first. I guess the first always has an edge in that respect. So it was a completely new type of project. I had to figure out how to do the thing. Maybe the first even had the most interesting people. I don't know. Maybe slightly so.
How did you ascertain who to speak to for the books?
Let's start with the first book. I knew I had actually worked for the first chapter in the first book, a fellow by the name Michael Marcus. He and I knew each other. He had gone off to be a trader. I'd actually took my first job on Wall Street was the job he was vacating. He was an analyst. He was leaving. I was coming in. We crossed paths, talked a little bit, ended up becoming friends and having lunch together every few weeks while he was still in New York. And he left to become a trader, so to speak. He ended up becoming a great trader. He later hired me for the firm that he was managing prop money for. And so I knew him and I knew some other people. I knew Bruce Kovner and a couple of others. So I had a beginning number of traders that were not basically known to the world at that time, but were great traders. And then I did just the legwork. There were some people that I knew the same way anybody would know just from being cognizant of the media. Something like the fellow like Jim Rogers, who's one of the more well-known people out there. And I didn't know Jim personally, but what I did with Jim is I knew he was teaching a course in Columbia. I sent him my first analytical book saying, hey, I'm not a journalist. I'm an analyst, and I'm interested in doing this book on traders, and I wanted to interview you. And so, like, he agreed. And interestingly enough, the very first thing he said to me when I walked into his brownstone apartment was, well, I don't know why you want to speak to me. I'm not a trader. You know? That was the very first thing he said. He considers himself an investor. So the first part of our interview was debating whether he was a trader or not. So anyway, that's how I picked the people. And also, the people that I knew, I networked to other people. So, for example, I didn't have the complete list of the people I was interviewing when I started the book. I got Marcus to do the interview with a lot of difficulty because he's a very, very private person. And so I flew out to Malibu to interview him. You know, after spending the whole day there and having his cook us dinner and everything, we're sitting there and pushes back the chair after dinner. He says, you know, this wasn't really bad. It was kind of a cathartic experience. And he says, you know who you should speak to. And then, boom, he gives me Ed Sakota, who he says, Ed's the best trader I know. So this is coming from someone who has turned a $30,000 account into $80 million. You know, so when he's telling you about the best trader, you know, he knows, you kind of, you know, pay attention. So he liked Ed Sakota and liked that. So the interviews I did, I always asked the question, who else do you think I should speak to?
Did you feel intimidated at any stage with these?
No, I never feel intimidated by anybody or anyone. I'm used to dealing with people smarter than I am and better than I am. And, you know, I have no problem. So I would always do these interviews. I always felt, I felt pretty strong in my, I have a strong element of confidence and kind of, you know, my understanding of the different things and analytical insights and stuff like that. So, hey, I'm not a great trader like these people are, but I do feel confident. I have always felt confident to converse with them at a meaningful level. So I never felt intimidated.
Before we get to the quintessential question to ask Jack Schwager about characteristics of great traders, I'd like to ask this question. Is there anyone in the Market Wizard series that you really related to? Who did you particularly relate to personally, apart from Michael Marcus?
You know, Michael Marcus, you know, we were friends, but you know, Michael is not like the natural person I would gravitate to in that sense. He was just somebody who was, we crossed paths, we got to know each other, and we don't keep in touch. I mean, I did see him 3-4 years ago. But as far as people who, none of the people that I interviewed in any of the books sort of are turned into a lifetime regular friend, that type of thing. There's nobody that said, boy, this is like, you know, we just click and we just get the. So I think I was in good terms with all of them. I think if I called anyone, they would speak to me and all that. But nobody that really kind of fills that bill in terms of like a natural fit in terms of personalities. And there's nobody that I interviewed that I say was like, hey, that's really like me. You know, nobody that I would, because I don't think any of them were, which is neither good nor bad. It just means we're different.
And we'll hear more of Jack Schwager after the break. The event of the year has arrived. Wealth Retreat is the ultimate mastermind networking conference for real estate investors, share traders and entrepreneurs. Create a legacy of lifetime wealth and develop an instant peer group of like-minded investors. Join Michael Yardney, Chris Tate and Louise Bedford on the Gold Coast for 5 days starting the last weekend in May. To find out more and to qualify for a special bundle of bonuses because you're a Talking Trading listener, go to wealthretreat.com.au/trader. You'll get a rare chance to sit one-on-one with Chris Tate and Louise Bedford when you come along. So visit wealthretreat.com.au/trader today. So, the quintessential question to ask Jack Schwager, which I'm sure you get asked all the time and speak about all the time. What are some of the characteristics of great traders. What traits set apart those individuals who have achieved extraordinary success in the markets?
Right. And you're right. That is a question that always comes up. In a sense, I mean, I could dodge the question and say, really, all of the market wisdom books really are an answer to that question. That's what I was trying to do, is like, what sets these people apart? So any answer I give in 2 minutes or 3 minutes is basically trying to collapse, I don't know, what is it, maybe 3,000 pages of material into a couple of minutes. So I will tell you what I do believe is the first and foremost thing that people need to understand, because without that, it's hopeless. The conception of there being some sort of correct way to trade or analyze the markets is a misconception. It's just not so. I quote myself occasionally. One of my own lines in the book, which I think is very apropos to this, is there are a million ways to make money in the markets. Unfortunately, they're all very difficult to find. But the point is that there are a million ways to do it, meaning that there's just all sorts of different ways. And you get people completely, I mean, we talked about Jim Rogers, right? You talk to Jim Rogers, you ask him, he's purely long-term investor, fundamentals. To him, technical analysis, black magic. His line is, I never met a rich technician. And then he pauses to be cute, unless you count the ones who sell their services. And you'll get people like Marty Schwartz, who basically started out as fundamental analyst. His job on Wall Street was to be a fundamental analyst. Spent 10 years at that, since he always lost money trading on fundamentals. And then he got this, I got rich as a technician. So you get not only different opinions, you get opinions that are 180 degrees apart. You have each one viewing the other's approach with complete cynicism. So that tells you that there really is no one way of doing it. You know, Jim Rogers could never make money if he had to trade on technical analysis because he doesn't believe in it. And Schwartz couldn't make money trading fundamentals because he doesn't believe that could be used for trade. So you have to start out with an approach that kind of fits your belief system and what works for you. And it's different for everybody else. And people kind of, you know, will email me and say, well, what do you recommend? How should I trade? Well, and I tell them, it's like you're asking me, I don't know what you look like. I have no idea if you're 6'6" or 5'5" or weigh 300 pounds or weigh 150. And you're asking me what size suit you should get. I have no idea. And nobody can answer that question except the person themselves. So the very, very first starting point is you've got to figure out what is the right approach for you. And that's not an easy thing. It's not necessarily what you start out thinking it is. And I believe most traders will probably go through transitions. They might start out with one thing and think that's it. Maybe that turns out not to be it. They'll evolve into something else. But all great traders that I've interviewed eventually evolved to using an approach that totally fit who they were, what they believed in, and it was a natural match.
Straight from the horse's mouth, can we have two more traits or characteristics of great
traders? Oh, sure. So more traits. One really important one is complete flexibility, like complete lack of loyalty to the position. You know, great traders don't hope their trade's going to work out. They do something, they think something is going to happen in the markets. If it happens, great. If it doesn't happen, well, I was wrong, I'm out, gone. No loyalty to positions. They're able to change on a dime. They can say, well, I thought gold was going up. We got some news. It should have gone up, but now it's going down. I think not only was I wrong about it's going up, I think it's going down. I'm going to flip my long to short. So great traders are not only able to get out of positions that are not working the way they're supposed to, but they're able to completely switch positions, directions. In fact, the classic example of that, and I don't think one could ever come up with even a better example, was Stanley Druckenmiller in the record-breaking 1987 stock market crash. And I'm old enough to have lived during, not only lived through it, but actually even working on Wall Street during the time. We are talking that in terms of the futures markets, which completely discounted the price, physical stock market never actually was able to catch up. The tape was so far behind that the actual stock prices never fully caught up to the full decline. But futures could trade instantaneously, and they did. Based on futures, the one-day decline of 29%. One day, 29%, wow. Which is totally, totally astounding for, you know, considering the most mature market in the world, the U.S. stock market. The thing with Druckenmiller was the market in that year topped in around August. The crash happened in October. The market had been going down for a few months. In fact, the week before the crash, it went down pretty sharply, nothing like 29%, maybe 10 or 12%, I forget exactly what. But it was a pretty bad week. And Druckenmiller had been short into the market. And he was running multiple funds, and he was basically short. He was with Dreyfus at the time, I believe. Anyway, by that Friday, the market had sold off so much, he thought it was at a support level. And so he basically got out of all his short positions. But not only did he get out of short positions, he actually flipped around and went leveraged long because he thought the market should bounce. And that weekend, and this is way too long of a story, completely tangential, and if people are interested, they can read the original Market Wizards. But that weekend, he realized that he had made a mistake. He just realized that was the wrong move. He wished he could have taken it back, but of course he couldn't until Monday morning. So he had to wait for the Monday market opening. The only problem was, I think the market gapped about 12% lower Monday morning. Now, the interesting thing with Druckenmiller is if you check his records for October 87, you'll find he only has a small loss. And how is that possible? And the reason is because he made money for the first half of the month when he was short. And then what he did in the very, very beginning, very opening, right at the first hour of trading, he not only covered this entire long position, leverage long, they put on Friday late in the day, at a big loss, you know, market gap way lower. But he flipped it back to short. Now, that is the epitome of a professional trader. And, you know, you can't make up a story like that. You know, there are lots and lots of other trades, patience, discipline, you know, on and on and on. But, you know, those are some of them.
Are there any other stories that really stand out in all the Market Wizard series? It must have been so much fun and so stimulating to interview all these fabulous people.
I'm always trying to get people to, I'm trying to get stories out. So what I put in the books is either I put it in because it has something important to say about trading and, you know, provide some sort of lessons or whatever. And I put stuff in because my interviews are way longer. If you had the transcripts of the interviews, in some cases they could be 20 times as long as the actual text. People don't realize that. If I did the verbatim interviews, you could use it as a sleeping pill. I mean, it would be deadly dull. See, it takes hours to get somebody before they really start saying something interesting. So the idea is to really glean that stuff out, put it together in a way that flows. But what I'm looking for is either stuff that has something important to say, useful to say, and stuff that reads that's interesting. That's a good narrative. So I'm always trying to get stories out of people. And one of the things I always ask people is, you know, like, what was your worst experience? Because that's always a good story. So those are the types of things I always try to get. And the books are filled. People are often surprised at how many of these traders, these great traders, blew up, sometimes more than once early in their career. And that comes out because that's exactly the type of stuff I'm trying to get. And they're more ready to talk about. They're eager to talk about how the times they did poorly. Those things really stick in their mind. If you tell them, yes, tell me about your best trade, you know, oddly enough, that question doesn't get you very much useful material.
Every time, I'm just going to relate this back to me for a moment. Every time I do an interview on Talking Trading with someone who's a real master of their game, and it might be a great trader or it might be someone in the psychological field, I feel like I grow a bit, I change a bit. When you wrote the Market Wizard series, how did it change you?
Well, you know, basically, you know, I tried to put what I felt were truths in that book. And the reason the books remain, I mean, the original Market Wizards now, it's over 25 years old. And the reason why it maintains its relevance is because the truths it deals with are kind of timeless. And they apply to anybody who's reading the book, and they apply to myself. So I kind of learn from them basic principles. So, for example, I, like probably everybody else, focused on, you know, trying to find the, you know, be smart about finding a great way to trade the markets or a great entry approach. But I did get from the books, my own books, that really the management of risk is much more important than the entry level. So real respect for risk and not letting losses run away.
Do you consider yourself a great trader?
No. I consider myself a pretty poor trader. It's just that I just know enough to make to be net profitable. But I have all the wrong traits. I'm highly impatient, which is the opposite. You know, to be a good trader, you really need patience, and that's completely counter to my personality. So that's an example of a trait that I have in reverse. But I know that. So I can try to control for that. I would get emotional with trades. Therefore, I avoid that by always putting in protective stops on new positions. So I make my decision before I put the trade on. And I give that advice. It's not my original advice. Again, this is something I got out of the books. A few people had said things along this line, but the one who probably said it most clearly was Bruce Kovner, who said, I always know where I'm getting out before I get in. And that's really great advice, because before you get into a trade is, the way I would put it, is the only time you have complete objectivity.
You have a new project up and running called Fundseeder.
Right.
Would you like to tell us about it?
Sure. So first of all, to give credit where credit is due, I'm one of the co-founders, but Fundseeder was not my original idea. It was the idea of partner and the CEO and really true founder, who's Emmanuel Bellari. So we were together at a conference one time, and we had dinner. And he said, you know, Jack, I've been thinking about doing this thing. And he pitches Fundseeder to me. And basically the idea is to create a web that would be kind of a clearinghouse for discovering undiscovered great traders and being able to connect them with investors looking to invest with, you know, emerging trading talent. The idea is that you would provide this venue for traders to link their accounts to the site. And a key important part of this was that the accounts would be linked, and therefore you would be getting the data from the brokers. And not only that, they're coming from the broker on a daily basis, so you kind of develop daily data. So you'd be developing these daily records verified, because they're coming from the broker, for traders worldwide, and you'd be capturing people globally and people who are not known and people who are not discovered, because you're providing a place for them to go and to post their, you know, to set up their accounts. Where if you're some trader, I don't know, in Poland or wherever, and you know you actually are a good trader, good luck trying to raise money, you know, to become a manager. Nobody will be interested. You basically nowadays, you have to have an Ivy League degree and you have to have the right connections. But for people who don't have the connections, who don't have necessarily the ideal pedigree or whatever, never get the opportunity, even if they're good, to be able to break into the industry. So the idea that he had was to create this website where they get their accounts linked on the website and verified, and have an opportunity therefore to prove that they're good traders. And at the same side, you then make that information available to qualified investors who are looking for that type of talent. So that was the basic idea of sort of bypassing the Wall Street status quo curator model and be able to connect traders directly with investors. And I should be clear here that, because there's a need for it, there's lots of traders who worldwide who can trade but have no hope of ever getting any money, the way the current model works. And I know there's plenty of investors out there who are looking to do trading now, but have no way of finding it, especially if it's not U.S., if it's not necessarily even developed country type of talent. I know I need to be clear here, because a compliance guy would be all over me, but I'm not. There are two separate companies. There's Fundseeder Technologies, or the Fundseeder site, which is where we've concentrated thus far. And that's where traders can go on, get their accounts linked and verified. They can access all sorts of, whole bunch of free analytics and sort of a toolbox for traders and a verification of their track record tool. So that's Fundseeder Technologies. Completely separate, we've got Fundseeder Investments. And that is just something right now is more or less of a landing page. ultimately, we will be taking registered qualified traders from that we find via the technology site and populating the investor side, and credit investors will be able to have access to that. That's sort of the second stage. So right now, we focused on finding great trading talent. You know, this is just early days. We just launched our new website, and we envision over the next couple of years, we'll get lots and lots of trading talent on there. And then the next step will be to develop the venue for investors. And in the meantime, we're acting more as moderators. Investors can contact us, tell us what they're looking for, and we can find traders, you know, that may be a match, just like we could use right now ourselves. But that's not quite there yet.
Will it become a book, another book?
Indeed, my plan, our plan is there will be a Market Wizard book with the working title Undiscovered Market Wizards. I think since we just launched a new platform, it'll take a couple of years of this platform running to really have the amount of people that I want and with long enough track record.
So that's fundseeder.com, FundSeeder.com.
Correct. Thank you.
Jack Schwager, it was a privilege to interview this morning. Thank you very much for your time and coming on to Talking Trading.
Well, it was fun doing it. You're energetic and interviewer with lots of good questions. So it was fun.
And that's all we have for you today, guys, from the Market Wizard himself, Jack Schwager. Stay tuned next week to hear from Alan Stevens on the art of face reading. I'm Caroline Stephen. On behalf of the team here at Talking Trading, thanks for your company. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any of the information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.